friends, welcome to Live Boldly with Sarah Schulten-Kranz, a survivor, thriver, adventurer, and believer in all things possible. My mission is to guide others to live their life boldly, regardless of circumstances. I believe we all have the power to overcome and lead joy-filled, happy lives. Recorded from the trail or in my office, I share inspiring stories from everyday people because we all deserve to be heard. You will also hear from handpicked professionals ready to guide you beside me. Are you ready? Let's do this. Hi, friends. Welcome to another episode of the Live Boldly podcast. I'm going to jump right in because today's episode is a little bit longer than normal. I have on Daryl Dixon. He's a dear friend of mine. He is a leadership, diversity, equity, and inclusion trainer. We had a really raw, incredible conversation about anti-racism, diversity, and what is happening in the world today. Daryl is a native of Atlanta, Georgia. He began his professional career as a classical singer. His musical talents have taken him to concerts, stages in Europe and throughout the United States, including a performance in the White House. Daryl made history when he became the first African-American to sing spirituals in St. Peter's Basilica in Vatican City for Pope John Paul II. He turned down an opportunity to tour with Harry Belafonte, and he followed a passion that led him to the work that he does today. I love this man. He is so driven by what he believes in. Daryl is regarded as one of the most powerful, inspirational, and relevant speakers and professional trainers on the subject of workforce diversity. He is the founder of Diversity Resource Group and the Professional Diversity Practitioners Network. Daryl works with organizations to help create an optimal work environment, an environment where every employee feels recognized, appreciated, valued, and that his or her talents are being optimally utilized. Daryl has consulted with organizations that range from small nonprofits to Fortune 500. He is a really amazing human being, and I could not be more thrilled to have him on this podcast. I became very, very raw and vulnerable with him during this podcast. There are some things that you may hear that you agree with. There may be things that you hear that rub you the wrong way. What I am hoping for is that you come into listening to this podcast with an open heart, an open mind, and also a journal to take notes. With that, I bring you Daryl. Daryl.
Hello, Sarah.
Hi. I'm so excited to have you here. I got to tell you, this week, I was thinking to myself, who are some people that I want to talk to this week? And you were one of them. And I had flipped through my Facebook. I love it because I never even told you this, right? I was flipping through my Facebook, scrolling through, and you had done a really cool, powerful conversation with somebody else.
Yeah,
it was like, and I remember you had posted on your page, and it was like, I woke up and just found out I was just doing this, right? I have to say that I met you recently. How long have I known you? Maybe, I don't even know. Time's just like twilight zone.
It's been about 2 years.
Yeah, it has been a while. And we'll get into how I met you. But you know, I follow you and I love the work that you're doing. And so when I saw that, I thought it's like, I need to have this conversation with you because I trust you. And you know that in trauma recovery, right? Yeah. It's having conversations with people that you trust allows you to go deeper. And it allows you to be more vulnerable. And so that's why I picked you to actually get on with me. There you go.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I just want to, how we met, so that people understand how we met. We met a couple years ago in a Facebook group mm-hmm. when David came out as gay and your wife came out as gay, correct?
Correct.
So we met through that and we were kind of following each other and the work that we do. And I was following what you do. And then you were going to be out in California and we met up and had dinner in Santa Monica. And the rest is history. Right away, I was like, we sat there and we had the best conversation. It was so good.
It was a good conversation, wasn't it? Fun dinner.
Fun dinner, followed with cookies. It was awesome. So I don't forget anything.
Oh my God.
I know. And then we also saw each other another, I think, right? We followed each, we saw each other another time after that, didn't we? I think we did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, so here we are.
Yeah, I miss those trips to California, but with COVID, you know, I do work with one of the universities out there close to you and haven't been able to get back. So anxious to get back, though. See you face to face.
Seeing face to face is so important, right? So I want to start this with this. I did a really good had a great Facebook Live conversation yesterday with a woman, a biracial friend of mine, and it was all about race. And what it's been like for her to live here in the South Bay. And we got into some really good topics. So if you guys have not watched that, go back and do it, because it's on my page and it's a really good conversation that we had. And I started it with this, because I know for many people, this can be an uncomfortable conversation to have. I don't think it should be that hard personally, because I think that through the uncomfortable, that's where we learn. For some people, it can be really, really hard. But I was watching something on Sunday morning, and it almost made me start to cry when I heard this guy say this. He was a pastor, and he said, "What I'm going to say may come out wrong to many, but at least we are speaking." And I wrote that down in my notes because I think it's so important for us to be having these conversations and to be speaking. And when I mentioned that to you before we got on, one of the things that you said was, would you like to tell me what you said? Because I was like, bam, he's right. Can't deny it.
Right. It's uncomfortable for many people because they haven't had any experience doing it. Because you mentioned you grew up in a rural area or something. And really, that's not the factor. The factor is that whites traditionally just have not been... It's not a conversation you've had to engage in.
Right.
Because white was just kind of the normal. We don't have to talk about race. We're just people.
Yep.
But people of color, this is a conversation we have every day. And Sarah, when I say every day, trust me. And your listeners, trust me. I'm not exaggerating. That's not an exaggeration when I say every day. It is literally a conversation that comes up every day in a black person's life for sure. Seriously, you can get in a cab, you can go to a grocery store. If you meet someone, a stranger, that subject is going to come up.
Yeah.
It intersects with everything that we do. So yeah, it's whether you were born in a small town or the big city of New York, traditionally white people, this is just something you haven't had to talk about. And it's something that we really do. Because that's what amazes me. You know, years ago, there was this book coming out, Courageous Conversations, Difficult Conversations about Race. The only people it's difficult for were white people. This isn't a difficult conversation for people of color. Oh, we know how to talk about this. All we're asking is that people listen and believe what we have to say. So I thought that was very funny that those books were titled Difficult Conversations, Courageous Conversations. Why does it take courage to talk about race? Why does it take courage? Just think about how crazy that is. It takes courage.
And this right here is why I freaking love you. Like, this is why our conversation in Santa Monica was so damn good, because I felt like, I was like, oh, cool. Okay, here we go. Like, I think that for many people, it is uncomfortable. You know, and you're right. Like, this is something, I was a teacher. So like, I've had these conversations when I got in. I went to Madison, you know that, like I went to UW Madison and we would have these conversations, but even there, it was primarily, I was in art school. It's primarily a white, you know, most of my classmates were white. And so I didn't have to have the conversation so much there, except that when we started talking about the education part of it, you know, what it would be like to be in a classroom. But we talked about everything. If it was, you know, kids that had autism, disabilities, like the whole nine yards. And at the same time, I really wish that these conversations would have been had more.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. Like, I wish to God that we would have had a professor where it was like, not you're choosing to take this class and learn about it. I wish that we would have been having more of these conversations in every single one of my classes.
And I wish white people were having the conversation too, because your son and your daughter one day is going to interact with my son and my daughter. Maybe if someone had talked to that cop who had his neck on Mr. Floyd's neck, maybe if someone had talked to him when he was a little kid and say, you know, let's talk about this thing. Because see, Sarah, think about it. When you don't talk about it, you're communicating so much. That's such a loud message when you don't talk about it. Because think about raising a kid. You have kids. I have kids. Things that are important, we talk about with our kids, don't we?
Yep.
Things that are important, we talk about. So you send the message. If you're not talking about race, it doesn't matter. And that's the message is because just be like us. You know, we're not the same. There's a difference. The color of my skin makes me have a different experience from different people. So if you don't talk about it, you're sending the message is not important, and it is important. And there's nothing wrong with talking about it. It's a wonderful thing. I mean, that's just the beauty of this planet, that we were designed to have this thing that makes us look different. That's a beautiful thing. It should be embraced, not, oh, don't talk about it. As if something's wrong with it. That's the message you're saying, let's not talk about it. Something's wrong with it.
Right. So you know? I think you know this, and I mentioned this yesterday in my Facebook Live as well. My husband, when he was having relations for most of our marriage, it was with Black men. And I remember, oh, you didn't know that.
No,
so, it's one of those things for me where when I found out, I then had to face two things, which understand, like, I did grow up in a very small town where we didn't have the conversations. I went to a school where it was primarily, most of my classmates were white. I didn't have to have those difficult conversations because nobody also just had them with me. It was like exactly like you're saying, right? It just wasn't talked about. So then I had to address two things. I was born and raised Catholic, which now imagine, you see where I'm going with this? So then I'm having to face the whole experience of being married to somebody that I found out was gay. I had to face that, the betrayal, the relational betrayal on that, the trauma, the PTSD from when I was raped at 17 and the cops didn't believe me. And you know that, right?
Yeah, you told me.
I told you that. And so so I sat in the, and I was re-traumatized because now it was like, well, who's going to believe me about this with my husband? And then I'm, you know, dealing with all of the PTSD and my trauma from when I was 17 and sitting in the cop's office or in the department and having them, you know, ask me all the questions and me sitting there giving them my truth and them not believing my truth and then not pressing charges and then finding out this same person did it again, attempted to do it again. And so I was dealing with all of that, right? So then who do you trust? And then on the flip side of it, I'm also seeing all of these images of my husband being with Black men. Mm. And a lot of them, I mean, I had to go into the inner city in LA and deal with some of the people he had been with. So I've been in situations that, quite frankly, I cannot even believe that I had to put myself into. Mm-hmm. And I remember somebody coming out of when I was in inner city LA in downtown, and I was banging on a door in the middle of the night trying to find out what was going on behind that door. And, you know, everything is, it has got all of the boards, or not the boards, but like the grates, right, over the windows. And I remember this woman coming out and saying to me, "You're a young white woman. What are you doing here? Like, why are you here? Like, you should not be here." And I was just, I wanted to see for it myself, what was behind the door. Now, do you know why that was?
Why?
Do you know why that was? Because I did not want my kids to be feeling the same toxic anger that was flowing through me in that moment down the line. Because I had so much of just so much anger for, like, how could I be so betrayed in so many different levels? So it was a race issue for me at that point. I'm going to say that, like, it really truly was. I will be completely 1,000% honest with you. Yeah. Did I believe that all Black men were like this? Hell no. But I also had to get through the phase of my life of, I knew that in order to me to get to that place of love, absolute deep love, kindness, an embracing of where I once was, of all race, all gender, all sexuality, all everything, that I had to work through my own pain and the fact and understand that not everybody was like this. Does this make sense to you?
Yeah, sure.
Was I really deeply pained at that point though? Yeah. Every black man that I write about this in my book, every black man that would serve us when we were, you know, out to eat. And I'd sit there wondering, like, I knew that he was interested in black men. Was this particular person one of them that he had been with?
No.
Yeah. I mean, you start to go through that. And yeah. anybody in my shoes, could understand. And that's why I also am so open about it, because, you know, it literally was such a devastating experience for me, and one that I had to personally work through, because I didn't want my kids to grow up with a mom who was still questioning every black man that crossed my path. Do I now? No.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
If it had been white men, how would it have been different?
Oh, it totally would have been the same thing. Absolutely would have been the same thing. I believe that it would have been the same thing. It didn't have to do with, now that's a really good question. I can say that it wouldn't have been the same thing. But can I honestly say that? I don't know, because it wasn't white. It was black. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I'm being very, very honest with you. And so it was such a devastating experience for me. That just because I was like, okay, great. Now I have to, you know, and here's the reason why I'm actually appreciative for it, because it was in my face back then and I had to deal with it. Right. Mm-hmm. So like, I think, and I've had conversations with both my black friends and my white friends right now about this, like everything that we're living through right now. And they all say the same thing. It's putting it smack dab in front of their face and saying, I have to have these really difficult conversations, uncomfortable conversations within myself and with other people sitting next to me or across from me. And so it's a lot of internal, like a lot of internal thought, a lot of internal things that are coming up, which is good. I mean, I'm thankful that I had to go through that, you know, 6 years ago and really address a lot of my own race issues that I had. Because I mean, I did have them, I will tell you, you know, because I never had to explore it before.
Yeah. Well, I never knew that. But Sarah, you said something, because I was wondering, it made me think when you were just your last two sentences, you said you had to deal with that. But I always wonder, why is it that whites are so resistant to have the conversation? What's the fear of having the conversation about race? What is the fear about it?
Can I, I love you. I love that we are going back, like, so, like, straight into this, because this is what we need to be doing. And I told you, like, call me out on my shit on any of this stuff during this podcast and during this, like, conversation. You know what the fear is? The fear for me was the fact that there are so many things that I know in my past history, in my generations, within my family, that was wrong. Hmm. I know that it was wrong, right? And so I think that for a lot of people, I even talked to my mom about this today. I'm not betraying my family history by saying what they did was wrong. What I'm saying is what you did was wrong, and I'm honoring where I'm at right now in my family and creating something better for the present and the future. Does that make sense?
Oh, totally makes sense.
So I think for a lot of people, for myself included, I had to get past that through this whole time, this whole last 6 years, because a lot of what I write about in my book has to do with this, right? Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things within my family, and I freaking love my family, but it doesn't have to mean that I agree with their thoughts and a lot of how they have also brought me up. If it's my grandparents, my grandparents' grandparents, my parents, whatever.
Yeah, I think that's part of, there's a book called White Fragility. And I think That's really good. And I recommend that people, whites should read that. But I think that's part of the problem, the fear of having to really talk and address race, because feelings of guilt, you know, what my, you know, and I will tell you, Sarah, the work that I do, the reason I talk about this, trust me, it is never to cause any feelings of guilt, blame, or shame.
Right.
Those emotions are a waste of our time when it comes to racial issues. Guilt, blame, and shame. I'm not going to say anything to try to make you feel guilty. I'm not going to try to, you know, shame you. I'm not even going to call you a racist. I don't spend any time doing that. You know, as you heard me say on the other recording, that I don't care if people are racist, but I want people to know that we have a system that was developed in this country of racism.
Yep.
And we are all a part of it.
Yep.
One way or another, all of us, blacks, whites, Latinos, Asians, we're all a part of this system. Which part are we playing?
Yeah.
We're all part of it, and you can't deny it. I'm not blaming you for creating the system, but I hold you accountable for either perpetuating the system or interrupting it. Because in my mind, that's really it. You're either perpetuating racism or you're interrupting it.
Yep.
The work that I do, I try to train people and teach people how to interrupt racism. Seriously, a simple George Floyd, 8.5 minutes, someone could have interrupted that.
Yeah.
Someone interrupted that.
How can someone not interrupt that? That's just it. And you know, I'm so glad you brought this up too, because for me, being born and raised Catholic, right? And that's where the guilt also, what has always, like, I had so much guilt over, there was so many things, the guilt and shame over my entire past when people didn't even know my past, right? And so, and the way that the brain works, if anybody that knows the brain, I talk about this too in my book, In the Whole Nine Yards. When you're triggered by trauma brain, your brain will do some really weird ass stuff and your body will follow. And mm-hmm. So if I didn't work through all of those thoughts of how could you with, because it wasn't for me, it was like, you know, this is something that I talk about when we were out at a wedding one night and this handsome black waiter came by and fed us. And immediately I was like, holy crap. And clearly he's gay. And so I was like, oh my gosh. Like, it's just the way that the trauma brain works. You go down. It just, do you know anything about trauma brain?
Not a lot, Sarah.
Oh man, it is scary shit. It is scary, scary shit. Anybody that has had it, I am like using a lot of words on this particular podcast, but I like, I mean it. Like, it is scary, Daryl. It is scary. You immediately go into this place of fight or flight where you want to fight that person, but you just want to run away, but you want to be held by the person who loves you the most, which is the same person who hurt you the deepest. And so it is scary. So for me, that's why I also needed to work through all of that, because I didn't want to be that person where I ended up finding myself fighting somebody when they weren't even the issue. This is a loving human being who was simply serving us food. And my mind was going to an entirely different place when he didn't even do anything. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
And so in that moment, it's like we also have to face those times in our life where what's triggering us to not having these conversations? What's triggering us to not heal our deepest wounds? And I'm talking generational all the way through, right? Where it's like, what got us to where we are here today?
Sarah, let me piggyback on what you just said. I want you to think about young black children that have grown up in the United States, and they experience racism, and they recognize it by the age of 3.
Oh, I can't hear
it. Feel it. And imagine what they go through when they have to go out into the society and interact with white teachers,
yeah,
white police officers, white bankers, all that stuff that you're feeling and that you're explaining right now, they get a little bit of that every day of their lives. Every day of their lives. Think about that.
Every day. Like, you're trying to make me cry right now, aren't you? Because I'm going to.
Oh. There's a real term that's going to be, what's that book that they put medical illnesses in? It's the official, this is a real illness. It goes in this thing. Somebody on your podcast might know, it's the medical journal where they diagnose things. And they used to say people that were gay, they had them in there too or something. They took that out. But there's a real diagnosis of racial battle fatigue. It's real.
Yeah. I believe it. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I can't. So if I'm feeling that, okay, so really, if I'm feeling that way at the age of 41, can you imagine? I mean, I just can't. I just, my heart, like, how do you, at the age of 3, these kids are feeling this way? Where like literally every police officer that they then come by, or every, whatever it is, like, is this person going to hurt me? Is this the person that hurt my family member? Is this the person who did this? Holy hell.
Sarah, in my trainings, we talk about zones of comfort. You've got danger, risk, and comfort, zones of safety. And I'm telling you, Sarah, for most Black kids growing up in this country, they're always living in the danger zone. They're always in the danger zone.
So it's always in fight or flight. It's always, like, literally, it's always in fight or flight.
And then that becomes their normal, which is really sick, but it becomes their normal.
So how do you, I think that this may have been right here one of the most important aspects as well, because I talk about trauma brain so much, and I have never thought about what it would be like as a 3-year-old dealing with this. I never. And I hope that this, I really hope that this is opening the eyes and the lens to a lot of the people that are listening and watching this, because I can't imagine.
Yeah, Sarah, there's some stuff. You can go on YouTube and just put in the search the doll test, racism doll test. You'll find it. But they did this thing years ago showing, you know, Black kids. Have you ever seen that, the doll
test? No. Oh,
Sarah, that will break your heart. That, if you have a heart, that'll break your heart, where they have little kids starting ages 3, 4, 5, 6, and they've updated it to like within the past 5 years to bring in Latino kids. It was first done in Blacks to prove, it was done in the case to desegregate schools. It was an experiment done where they brought Black kids in, had a Black doll and a white doll, okay? And they would say things like, which doll is pretty? The white doll. Which doll is ugly? The Black doll. These are Black kids. Which doll is smart? The white doll. Which doll is bad? The Black. It goes, and that was back in the early 60s, and they just revamped it in the 2000s with Latino kids doing the same thing, now Black kids and younger kids, and they had the first time. Same results.
And it's the exact same results.
Same results. You know, which kid is smart? Which one is stupid? Which one is bad? And then, you know, what really makes you cry, Sarah, is they say, which doll looks like you? The Black doll.
Oh, my gosh.
They internalize all this stuff when they're just starting kindergarten.
So what do we do?
Yeah. Well, I think, what do you have to do? I really think, I go back to, there's so many things, but in no particular order. But remember after 9/11, the slogan was, if you see something, say something?
Yep.
I think that's powerful. When you see, but the thing is, sometimes if you're not even conscious of this, you don't even see it.
Right.
But there's some things that you see and you know that wasn't right. You just got a feeling. That was, if you have some sensitivity, if you see someone being mistreated, you know, if you're in the restaurant like you just said, and you see a family of color sitting there before you got there, but they were overlooked and came to your table first, speak up. You know, I believe this family was here before us.
Yep.
Little simple things like that.
Yep.
That's what I mean by interrupting. That was a little bit of an interruption. You know, if you well, another thing, so I say sometimes people don't even see that stuff because you're just not conscious. Just be more aware.
Be more aware. Yes. Yes.
Aware.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, I know people of color have their antenna up all the time because it's survival. Who's safe? What's not safe? What's not safe? And maybe I've never been a woman, but maybe women feel like that when they go out. Is this safe to walk in the street?
Well, okay. I do. I feel that way. Oh, yeah.
Well, maybe you have to have that same kind of antenna up when it comes to issues of race. Pay attention. Just be mindful of it. I think that's what people say they're woke. And I guess that's the, I don't know, I never figured out what that means to be woke, but people are woke. I guess that means just be aware and think and look, just because if you look, you'll probably see it. And when you see it, say something. If you see something, say something.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, Sarah, if you speak up, if you see an injustice, a racist act, because of the color, the skin that you're in, you have probably more voice and say than I would if I brought it up.
Yeah.
That's just a privilege you have, having the skin that you're in as a white woman. And someone white might listen to you more than they listen to me.
Right.
Because I'm just the angry black man, right? That's who
I
am.
You're the biggest freaking teddy bear on this planet, my friend.
But Sarah, I appreciate that. But you know, people see me as a threat. People see me as a threat. You know, I train all across the United States. And I'm telling you, I walk into a room, and before people get to know me, oh, you can see the look. You know the look, like, oh, is he safe? Is he going to, you know, curse us out today or get mad? I get all, you can tell. I'm the threat until I have to prove that I'm not. But that's what I get.
Exhausting.
Oh, it is exhausting.
Oh my God. The only thing that you could do is like your hugs, because your hugs are really hard. I remember that.
Okay.
You're like, okay. I remember hugs. Yeah. And so that's about it. I mean, I don't know what else to say except that you're a big teddy bear, which is a compliment in itself. I only call my closest like guy friends who are super vulnerable and they know who they are. I've had a few in my life where I'm like, you are a big freaking teddy bear. Like, that's so awesome.
Yeah. Well, like I said, if you speak up and say something, it might be received better. Because I just like, did you all see the video? I know, well, maybe you didn't, but just within the past week, this video comes out of this black woman in a park, just sitting in a park. And
I saw that. I was like, is this for real?
She's playing the black card. I'm like, seriously? This woman says she's playing the black card. You're playing the card, lady.
I know.
Playing the card. You pulled that race card. Questioning her in this park because I'm a citizen of this freaking United States. Yeah. And I have a right to sit in the park.
Yeah.
I'm not messing with you.
So I honestly had to Google that because I was like, is this, please tell me this isn't for real. Please tell me this isn't for real. And I Googled it to make sure that I was like, you have got to be kidding me. Kind of like the memes that are going around, the George Floyd memes where the kids are, there are kids who are reenacting the moment. And yes. I was like, and I had to do a search on that one too. I was like, please tell me this isn't real. Please tell me this isn't real. And can we call here's the thing that I think is really important though too, and correct me if I'm wrong on this. You know, I do everything for my kids. Like you and I have talked about that. Like everything that I do from the bottom up is for my kids, even having these hard conversations. And like I am right now, right? And saying like, yeah, this is what I had to work through. Because if I had to work through it, somebody else is having to work through it too.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like bottom line. So yes, call out the kids, but can we call out the parents too?
Yeah. That's it. Racism is something that's learned. It is not natural.
That's why I'm saying, can we call out the parents too? Can we say
it's
like,
not natural.
No.
That's a learned behavior.
That is a learned behavior. And so that's where I sit there and I go, okay, if these kids are learning it somewhere, and if it wasn't by the parents, it's somewhere where these kids are that these parents don't know that they are. So mm-hmm. can we please call them out so that they can also be aware of what their kids are thinking and doing and how they're acting in society so that mm-hmm. if they're not teaching it to them, they figure out who is.
Sarah, and it's definitely the home influence is crucial, but they get the message 24/7. Just you turn on your television, you're going to be exposed to racism.
Yeah.
You look at that image of just was it last, this, man, I'm so messed up with days.
Yeah, well.
When President Trump leaves the White House with a band of white people, all white people, you know, saying we're going to declare, we're going to dominate. We're going to dominate. And he used his words very carefully. Mm-hmm. The man knows what he was saying, the message he was sending, the image of that. This is what black kids are saying. White kids are saying it too. Oh, we know who's in power. We know who makes who's in charge. We know who makes the decisions. They're getting it, not just from the parents. It's just our society, period.
Yeah.
It's everywhere. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so interesting. I mean, you think about things. Well, oh, Sarah, this just happened. I said, and this involves Mitch McConnell. When President Obama made a comment about something, he literally said, I wish he kept his mouth shut. This is a grown man. And you're a former president. I wish he kept his mouth shut. He could have said, I didn't appreciate his comments. That would have been a respectful thing to say if you disagree. I disagree with his comments. But to say, I wish he kept his mouth shut, who do you think you are?
Yeah.
And see, that's racism, folks. Because he just felt so entitled, so empowered to tell a black man who was president, shut up.
Yeah.
You told your children not to say that word, don't you? Maybe you did with your kids. We say, don't say shut up.
Right.
That's what you care our kids.
Right.
You said that against the president. I wish he kept his mouth shut. Yeah. Just shut up.
Yeah.
But something happened the other day that made me think, oh, just to show the hypocrisy. Sarah, I can't think of it, but something just happened about 2 days ago, and I said the hypocrisy, because he didn't tell this person to shut up or keep his... Maybe before this is over, I'll think of it.
Yeah.
But see, those things, and that's what I'm telling folks, this is what, Sarah, when people talk racism, people have to understand what it is. They have to understand what is it. And I'll give you a definition for your listeners today. Racism is the conscious or unconscious, intentional or unintentional enactment of racial power grounded in racial prejudice by an individual or group against another individual or group perceived to have lower racial status. That's the definition of it, folks. That's it. Conscious, unconscious, intentional, unintentional, but it's grounded in this belief that I have racial power over you. And the system of racism, that's how it's built. And I tell you, racism is a social construct that was very conscious because people sat down and planned it out. They voted on laws. They voted for Jim Crow. They voted for slavery. These were conscious decisions. They voted to take people's land. It wasn't unconscious, just some yahoo that happened to be out there all by himself and this thing. So no, this was very intentional. It was very conscious. whether it's conscious or unconscious, just like Senator McConnell's telling, I wish he kept his mouth shut. That might not have been your conscious intent, but I'm telling you, that was a racist statement to make, whether you intended it to be or not. It didn't matter your intent.
Right.
That's
right.
A very racial statement that you made.
Yeah.
And maybe you were oblivious to it. You didn't even have wherewithal to be conscious of it.
Yeah.
That's why I say whether it's conscious or unconscious. But I think, unfortunately, we've seen this in recent week. And let me tell you something, Sarah, What we're seeing, have seen this week, in the past few weeks, regarding Black lives being taken and killed, and there have been so many in the past 2 weeks. This is nothing new.
Right.
People are shocked, like, this has happened. This is nothing new. This has been going on since the start of this country, folks. We just have cell phones now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We just have cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, even with cell phones still, these cops that murder Black people still don't get charged.
Well, look at how long it took to charge these four.
Only because there's video. Right. Only because there's video.
Right.
That young man jogging in that neighborhood was months before the guys that shot him dead in the streets were arrested. Months. Only because the video came up.
Yeah.
This is nothing new. I tell you, you've heard me say this on that other video I did. When there was a shift in civil rights in this country, what shifted it was there were three civil rights leaders, not leaders, but workers. Schwarman, Goodman, and Cheney went down to Mississippi to support the civil rights movement, Black, Jewish, and white. They were taken from their prisons. No one ever, their jail cells, no one ever saw them again. When they declared that white person missing, the government sent federal troops into Mississippi to do an investigation. Mississippi Burning is the movie, I believe, if you want to watch that, Mississippi Burning. When they found, when one white person died, they sent the federal government in and dragged the Mississippi River looking for their bodies, because there was tips. That's where their bodies were. Folks, they pulled out dozens of dead Black bodies in that river, and people don't know this. This is nothing new. There's nothing new. This has been happening over and over again, but something, for some reason, I think I know the reason, this hit the tipping point.
Yeah, I was going to ask, that was going to be my next question. What was the tipping point?
That was the tipping point, because there was no struggle for a gun. There was the man laying on the ground, handcuffed, hands behind his back, and this man's adjusting his knee to make sure he stays on his neck, even after someone has said, there's no pulse. He stayed there for three more minutes. That was a public lynching right there. Undeniable, no questions. Not as if it's ever been a question for Black people.
Right.
It's never been a question that these people were murdered. There's no question, but even white folk can deny this.
Yeah.
You stay on that man's neck for 9 minutes. He's handcuffed on the ground, face down. What was the purpose of that? What was the purpose? And I really think this is just, it's like, no more, no more. And I saw someone on the news says, you know what? Yeah, we've got COVID virus going on. There's a bigger virus of racism, and I'm fighting for that. I'm fighting against that. Just putting their lives on the line to be peaceful marchers.
Yeah.
And let's be clear about history. Let's be clear about history, because what amazes me, people have gotten so upset about the protests. Well, I can tell you, they did it to Dr. King too. When Martin Luther King Jr. was having peaceful marches, J. Edgar Hoover, the head of the FBI, sent in disruptors, paid them to go in and cause violence, to break a store windows just to start chaos. They were paid by the FBI to do it. The same thing's going on now. All these people that are out there looting and all this stuff, those aren't the true protesters. They just got caught up in something that was started by some radical group that just wants to, and honestly, Sarah, now call me a conspiracy theorist, but I could see very easily white people getting in there to cause trouble to make black people look bad.
I'm not going to say no to that.
Yeah, because it didn't make sense. Living in Atlanta, Georgia, all this riot, because I grew up in Atlanta. We've had protests. I mean, this is where Martin Luther King Jr. was born and lived. This is like, you know, you talk civil rights leaders coming out of here and peaceful protests. I participated in peaceful protests when I was a college student.
Yeah.
When we saw what was going on downtown Atlanta, that's not normal. Something's not right about this. And they were burning the scene, trying to tear down the
scene. Building. It's like, seriously?
No.
No.
No. Uh-uh. We like CNN and we like Tina Turner.
Well, that's when I was like, wait a second here. What? This isn't making any sense at all.
Didn't make sense. And you talk to the people, asking them where was, they didn't even know how to get to the Capitol. These people were not from here. They were truly here just to disrupt peaceful protests. Because the peaceful protests have been beautiful.
Oh, they've been amazing. We've had them here. I'm actually working tonight. I'm working on another one. Well, I can't really, it's not completely set in stone yet, but we have a really awesome speaker that, and I'm heading one up here because I just really believe so deeply in the fact that these are conversations that have to be had, mm-hmm. but also not just stopping it. You know, I was talking to somebody here in my, who is a representative in our town just earlier today. And we were having this conversation. There's one kid that's having one next to, we had one this week. We have one next Tuesday, and then we're going to follow up with one. But the one that I really am passionate about, the place that I'm passionate about, is bridging that gap between the parents and the kids, because I believe so deeply that the parents have such influence on the kids. Mm-hmm. It starts in the house. And so we have to be having these conversations with the parents.
Yes.
That's why I knew, like, and I go back to those moments in the visuals and everything that I had in my head. And I knew that if it was, and I know this, like, I know this, like, I know this, you know me enough to know that what I went through and had to go through, I am not a racist person. I am not somebody of hate. I am not somebody of anger. I am not somebody, I am like in love, like love of life and people and humans, regardless of who they are. And I knew in that moment that this, if it was any other human being, could go one of two ways, right? And I knew it was like, wow, this is where this hits. This is where when people go through stuff like this, they look at it and it's like, I am now instilled with poison. And racism is freaking poison. You can't tell me this anything but that. Yeah. And I knew that I had to work through all of that stuff myself in order to get back to that place of ultimate love, forgiveness, and freedom of self and peace mm-hmm. within myself, right? Yeah. And it had nothing to do with anything but the visions that were in my head that I had seen, the things that I had to go through, the experiences that I had to go through. And so I'm so glad that you brought this up because that tears me freaking up inside to think that this is what little 3-year-old black boys are going through, like, and girls, like, this, just like this freaking tears me up because mm-hmm. it does. It starts then. I mean, right. I just like, wow.
See, Sarah, I don't know why this is coming up, but maybe for your listeners to understand why this slogan, and I'm not trying to make this a political thing, but it's just our reality that we're living in right now.
Bring it up.
To make a statement, to make America great again.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, look at the black experience in this country. It's never been great.
Yeah.
Never been great.
You know, so thank you, Daryl.
Great again. When was it great? I really wanted to ask, what time period? Was it the 50s? The 60s? The 20s? When was it great for black people?
Yeah.
What George Floyd has experienced in his death, that's been the norm for us in this country.
Yeah.
living in terror and fear that this could happen to us. That's been our great America. So that phrase is just kind of insulting. Make it great again. Well, tell me, when has it been great for Black people? But yeah. We know the person's agenda that made the phrase. So,
yeah,
you know. But I just really want to know, what time period was it great? When? I love my country. I served in the military. In case your listeners need to know, I fought for my country, and I would do it again. I served in the U.S. military. But I'm honest about it. When was it great for us?
Yeah.
Really hasn't been.
That's really good point. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Just point to the time period.
Yep. Just point. Exactly.
And everything Black people are trying to make great. See, oh man, I wish it. Let me tell you, I don't know why this is coming up either. But you look at organizations, when Black people try to do great things, they always get tainted. It always by the government. You talk Black Panthers, and people say Black Panthers and just think, oh. Do you know what Black Panthers did? They started.
Give it to us.
The reason we have lunch in school is because of the Black Panthers. They started that. Feeding kids at school. But the government labeled them as radical and just shut that organization down. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Whenever we try to do something great, the government has just shut it down. Yeah. It would go on and on and on. That's just one example that came up to me. But people just think Black Panthers just think, you know, terrorists. And see, you know, this is coming up. Man, I should do a screenshot of this, a picture of the word terrorist. It just amazes me. I'm thinking of Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah.
Timothy McVeigh?
Hello?
He blew up a federal building.
Yes.
But you know what? He walked out of there in handcuffs and went to court, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, I think about, what's the other person? The Unabomber.
Yes.
The Unabomber.
Yep.
Blew up people for years.
Yep.
He had his day in court.
Yep.
You know, you could just go on and on. I mean, these people that did horrible crimes.
Yeah.
This man's accused of a $20 counterfeit bill. And he dies?
And he dies. And
selling cigarettes on the street?
And during a pandemic when people don't even like, are you serious? Like, come on. I mean, there are so many people struggling right now. Like, I look at it like, this is, are you kidding? Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. I mean, I also cannot, this goes back to the same place also. Why didn't anybody help? Why didn't the cops stop him? Why didn't somebody say, this is not right?
You know, I wonder, Sarah, seriously. I've asked myself, if I had been on the sidewalk, would I have just thrown my body out there and just probably been killed? I would have been killed. I would have been shot. But I think you got the four cops with guns? You know, I wonder what would I have done if I had been standing there?
So that is actually a question that I'm curious about. What would you have done? I know what I would, I believe I know what I would have done.
I know I would have screamed like crazy. My voice would have been so loud, just screaming, but I don't know. I think that's a situation. If I had some people with me, I'd like to think that, but I don't know. I don't know if I've been that, because I know me. I've always been a defender of the weaker person.
That's me too.
I've always been that person to step up and put my own self at risk to do that. But I probably would have been shot and killed if I jumped on that policeman to get him off of his neck But if I'd been with a group of about 50 people, I think we would have charged him.
So I want to ask you this. So if it would have been me that would have jumped on him, because I know what I would have done. I know what I would have done.
They would have pulled you off. They would have just pulled you off. You wouldn't have been shot.
Nope.
There, if that had been you, you would not have been shot.
Yep. And how sad is that?
They would have tussled with you.
Told me to get away. Told me to get away. We got this. We got this.
Yep.
And I think that that is a very important thing to say right there. And I think what's even more important is for us to leave the listeners with the fact that this is a question for you to ask yourself. What would you have done?
Yes.
That is such an important question. And I also want to follow up with, do the deep work. It is our responsibility every single time. What the heck? There you go. Declined somebody's call. It is our responsibility, every single one of us, to do the deep work and to ask ourselves the hard questions, the uncomfortable questions, and to have these conversations with one another. Because if we don't do it,
right,
what's gonna happen? What's gonna happen?
I'm gonna clarify so people be clear. When you say if we don't do it, I'm saying if white people don't do it.
Yep. Thank
if
you.
If white people don't do it.
Thank you.
Hear about that.
White people don't do it.
Black folk have been shouting from the rooftops for years.
Yeah.
And just being ignored, killed, slaughtered. Until white people get as upset about this as people of color are, we're going to have status quo.
Yeah.
Because the truth is, in this country, the power is still in white people.
Yeah.
That's just the system that's been developed and created. And that's why I say, you know, we didn't talk about a lot about white privilege, but you heard me talk about on the other video. It's something you have. It's not an accusation against people. Like, I'm accusing you of something. It's just something that comes with being born white in the United States of America. There's a privilege that comes with that, and you can't give it up. And I'm not asking anyone to give it up. I'm asking you to use it for a right, in a righteous and just way.
Yeah.
Maybe if there had been white people standing around telling that white cop, get off of him, maybe they would have listened to somebody. You know, if someone's being discriminated and for housing or a job, maybe the white person speaks up, but you've got a privilege. And I think with that comes responsibility.
Yeah.
Comes responsibility. Are you using it? Because you honestly, we're at the times you can't be on the sidelines. Again, like I'll end with what I started with. When it comes to racism, you're either perpetuating the system or you're interrupting it. There's no more, I'm in the middle here. No, you're either perpetuating this thing or you're interrupting it.
Yeah.
So tonight you go to bed, I think, you know, white people should ask, did I do anything to interrupt racism? Because it's happening all the time. All the time, everywhere. That's a question. Did I do anything to interrupt that today?
Yeah.
Or interrupt that with my kids' development or whatever. Did you do something today?
Yeah. Thank you. And
if people everywhere did that little part, we'll start to see a difference. We'll see a curve in racism. We'll see a curve.
Curve. I'm sorry, I just have to. That curve. This has been 2020 has been such a powerful year on so many levels. And I want to thank you.
Thank you, Sarah.
Because honestly, Daryl, like, I trust you. I love you. And you, like, you're an incredible human being. You're just an incredible human being all the way down.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. And you know my admiration for you and your work. And I wish you all the best.
Yeah.
All the best.
Thank you. Do you want to, and I know that I'm just going to say this because also I know you just wrote a book.
Yeah.
I did. You want to share it?
I can tell you, yeah. It's titled Managing Diversity, What Managers and Supervisors Need to Know to Manage Diversity Effectively. And it's on Amazon. You just put in Managing Diversity, Daryl Dixon, D-A-R-Y-L-D-I-X-O-N, it'll pop up. But yeah, I just published it in March. And I did it for people, really, for supervisors. It's literally for a handbook for managers and supervisors on how to deal with this stuff at work. But the principles apply in life. But it's really kind of a manual on what to do to address race at work. Because I tell you, and here, then I'm really done, Sarah.
No, I could sit here for like hours with you. You know that. But I could.
But if you have influence in your places of business, your workplace, know this, that the emotions that Black people are going through right now, they're taking that emotion to work. I think every leader in an organization should be addressing this. This is not something you ignore.
Yeah. Correct.
To ignore it hurts. You have to know that your people are hurting right now. And in your workspace, you need to allow space for people, just hold space for people to just come together if they want to come together, just to support one another, just to be there and acknowledge pain and hurt. And don't, because it's going to work. People take it to work. It's just not in the streets. Those people are going to work somewhere too. Well, with COVID, even with COVID, people are still going to work. So I would just suggest, you know, if you have that kind of influence, bring that to your leadership attention. We might need to just address this and have something, just a whole space for people.
Yep.
I know it would be appreciated.
Yep. You and I are going to be doing some talking beyond this for sure.
Okay.
For sure. And I just want to thank you so much because I've learned a lot myself during this time and had a lot of realizations myself. And I'm just blessed, honored, and thankful. So
thank you, Sarah.
You're amazing. You're amazing. Right. Thank you, my friend.
You take care.
Friends, thank you for listening to the Live Boldly podcast. I am grateful to have you here, and I would love to invite you over to sarahschultenkranz.com to grab my free 7 Steps to a Joy-Filled Life. I share these 7 steps from my own heart, soul, and experience. These steps transformed my own life from victim to survivor. Also, please, let's all be a ripple effect of change in today's world. I ask of you to please share this podcast with others that may need to be inspired, or who need to hear from others going through where they are right now. To grow this podcast, please leave an iTunes review, go to my Instagram or Facebook page, and let me know what you think. I love hearing from each and one of you. I love sharing your thoughts, messages, and inspiring words. Because we are not alone in this world, friends. Let's keep the ripple moving. It begins with each one of us. I love you, and have a great remainder of your day.